Turn with us to 2 Samuel chapter 24. And this is about David numbering the people. A lot of people are confused by this. It doesn't seem like he did a great sin here, and I did some research on it, and hopefully it'll be a blessing to you. If you're ever studying the Bible and you want some good materials and see how everything links together, there is a free product out there called eSword. It's free, it doesn't cost anything, it's put out by a Christian group, and it's basically the Bible in there. And you can type in a reference, and it'll show you how it links to everything else. And it also has a bunch of commentaries in there. You can kind of see, and you can research real fast how they all go together. 2 Samuel 24, verse 1. And again, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he moved David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. And some people wonder what did Israel do, again, to anger God? There's all kinds of things it could have been. The king before David wasn't a very good guy. His name was Saul. He did all kinds of things that got God mad at him, so bad that God basically moved him and killed all his sons off. And so you go into it. Let's go to 1 Chronicles 21, verse 6 real fast. Everybody thought this was a bad idea when David went to do this. His general, Joab, said this is a bad idea. I find it interesting. Is it a good idea to disobey your king? Anybody? You think that's a good idea? What happens if you disobey your king and they find out about it? Your head comes off and it rolls down the hill. That's if you're lucky. If he wants to be mean about it, he can take a while and just kill you. Joab thinks it's such a bad idea that he disobeys his king. In verse 6 it says, well, go ahead and go to 5. When Joab is done numbering, he goes, and Joab gave the sum of number of the people unto David, and all the people were 1,000 and 100,000 men drew sword, and Judah was 400, 70,000 men that drew sword. But Levi and Benjamin counted he not among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. It was such a bad thing to him that he says, I'm not going to do it, when David tells him to do this. And we'll come back to that in a second. I'll go ahead and go into it now. What happens when you number the people? When we do a census, what's the big deal? Anybody ever do a census before? You fill out a little thing. I go, how many people are in my household? 4. Sometimes they ask how much your income is. I tell them, basically, go jump in a lake. It's none of your business. If you want to find that out, go ask the IRS. But that's what a census is. Does it cost you anything? No. Not that big of a deal. Census is a little different when you're in Israel. You only did it in time of war. The census then was, they didn't ask how many children you had. They didn't ask who was in the house. It was, how many men can draw a sword to fight? So some people think it was a sin because maybe David was getting a big head about how big of an army he could have. Because he had a standing army, but when somebody invaded, everybody who could draw a sword went into the military. Everybody got pulled up. As a small nation, everybody draws a sword. But there's another thing I found out that was interesting. When he did that, for the king said to Joab, the captain of the host, which was with him, go now to all the tribes of Israel, from Dan even to Beersheba, to number ye the people, that I may know the number of the people. And Joab said unto the king, now the Lord thy God, add unto the people, how many soever they be 100-fold, and in the eyes of the Lord the king may see it. But doth my Lord the king delight in this thing? Notwithstanding, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the captains of the host. All the captains are saying, there's no reason to do this. And Joab and the captains of the host went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. And they passed over Jordan and pitched in, I don't know how to say it, but a roar on the right side of the city that lieth in the midst of the river Gad and toward Jazer. And they came to Gilead, and it just goes forward. So we get to verse 8. So when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. Does it take 9 months and 20 days to go through Israel and get the number? No. So what on earth were they doing for 9 months and all this time? They were doing what Israel does in time of war. There's a war tax. You pay it. Is there a war going on? There's no war going on. But yet you're doing a census, so the war tax goes out. And if you can't pay the tax, they got something for the poor people to do. The poor people get to go work in the king's field for free. So basically, he's passing a war tax in a time of non-war taking stuff from the children of Israel, which he is also the king of, and he's also a child of Israel. Now, I don't know how you look at it, but I think that's called stealing. Right? There's no war, but I'm doing a war tax. And by the way, if you ever look at your telephone bill, look at some of the things there. There's still a war tax on there from when they had telegraphs for the Spanish-American War. We're still paying for it. But that's just a freebie. So God has had found a reason to get mad at Israel for this. He was looking for a reason. I read in some people think it was from when Saul went forward and did some of the things he did. When he went against the Amalekites and he didn't kill everybody. And then there was one group he wasn't supposed to kill and he decided to kill them. But you can research that on your own. So David sinned against them. Can you sin against God and get away with it? No, you may think you get away with it. You may get away with it for a long time. But you're not going to get away with it. 2 Samuel 24. In verse 11, we'll go start with verse 10. And David's heart smote him after he had numbered the people. And David said unto the Lord, I have sinned greatly, and I have done it. And now I beseech thee, O Lord, take away the iniquity of thy servant. I have done very foolishly. He realized after it was done that this wasn't what he was supposed to do. Have you ever done something and then that afterwards you're like, ooh, I shouldn't have done that. That was a bad idea. He did the right thing. He asked God for forgiveness. When David was up in the morning, verse 11, the word of the Lord came unto the prophet of Gad, David's seer, saying, seer is another word for a prophet, or even a preacher, I guess you could say. Go and say unto David, thus saith the Lord, I offer thee three things. Choose thee one of them, that I may do it unto thee. I'm glad God doesn't give me choices when he punishes me. Just go ahead and dish it out to me. So Gad came to David and told him and said unto him, shall 7 years of famine come unto thee in thy land? Or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies while they pursue thee? Or that there be 3 days of pestilence in the land? Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him as sent me. You have three choices, David. None of them sound very good to me. Shall you have 7 years of no food, basically, having food? Now, if you read two chapters before this, they had just gone through 3 years of famine. God had been angry at them, and we'll go into that in a second because it ties in well with this. So he basically just got done with 3 years of this. You want 7 years of food problems in a row? No, not something he probably wants. Or wilt thou flee 3 months before thine enemies? How would you like to lose battles for 3 months? David is known as a what? A warrior king. When his son Solomon took over, nobody messed with Solomon. Solomon fought no battles. Nobody fought Solomon because there was nobody left that had the will to fight him. David defeated everybody. He was always at war. Saul before him was always at war. David was subduing everybody. So do you want to run from your enemies for 3 months? Watching your soldiers die, losing battle after battle, and watching your cities fall. No, you don't want to do that. He's a warrior king. Plus the fact, 3 months. So he goes for the smallest thing. 3 days of pestilence in thy land. Now advise and see what answer I shall return to him and sent me. I would probably pick the pestilence two. 3 days. Does that sound bad? 3 days of punishment? Compared to 3 months of running or 7 years in problems? I think I can handle 3 days. Maybe, you know, everybody will get the flu and we'll be done with this. And David said unto Gad, I am in a great strait. Let us fall now in the hand of the Lord, for his mercies are great, and let me not fall into the hand of man. God's going to send the pestilence. I'd rather have that happen than be put at the mercy of men chasing me for 3 months. So the Lord sent a pestilence unto Israel from the morning even to the time appointed. And there died of the people from Dad even to Beersheba, 70,000 men. When the angel stretched out his hand unto Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord repented him of the evil and said to the angel of the... I just lost my place. I said to the angel, destroy the people. It is enough. Stay now thine hand. The angel of the Lord was by the threshing place of Araunah the Jebusite. And David spake unto the Lord when he saw the angel that smote the people and said, lo, I have sinned and I have done wickedly. And this is the part that I've been trying to get to the whole thing. But these sheep, what have they done? Let thy hand, pray thee, be against me and against my father's house. How many people died? 70,000 people. Who sent? David. What about those 70,000? That's exactly what David said. These sheep, what have they done? His sin cost 70,000 people their lives. His sins caused 70,000 widows and mother wives lost their husbands, mothers lost their children, fathers lost their sons, brothers died. For whose sin? David's. Our sins don't just affect us. It doesn't. It never does. Adam's sin, Eve's sin, who did that affect? Everybody. It doesn't just affect one person. I have one person for my second hour in here. I'm sorry. You're listening to me 2 hours straight. Oh, that hurts. What did you do that for? But I try to teach them over and over again. Think before you do something. If you're going to sin against God, it's going to have long-lasting effects. And it may not just affect you. It's going to affect other people. If I do something incredibly stupid, it's probably going to affect my kids. It may have long-lasting effects on my kids. Let's say I get a job offer in California, and God doesn't want me to go to California. And I go to California. Who am I taking with me? My family. If I take my family out there, guess what? I'm out of God's will. Who else is out of God's will because of me? My kids and my wife. Whose fault was it? It was mine. Who's it going to affect? Everybody. It's going to mess up my kids. There's a job offer. Well, actually, it's not an offer. I had an interview Wednesday at work for a different job. This is my prayer. Not that I get the job, even though it pays more. Do I want more money? Of course I want more money. That means I can pay for things that I can't, that need to be taken care of. But I pray this. Give me the job if I'm supposed to have it. If I'm not supposed to have it, have them pick somebody else. I'd rather be in God's will and out of God's will with cash. I've had cash before and been out of God's will and it didn't do me any good. And you'd be surprised how fast you can go through money when you're out of God's will. It's like you got holes in your pocket. The Bible says that somewhere. If you're out of God's will, it doesn't matter. And if God lets you keep the money, it may take your health away. What good is money if you can't don't have health? Guy at my work this week. Nice guy. And a very nice guy. I like him. He's married. Just had a preemie baby. And the baby just passed away. It didn't survive at the hospital, even though they thought it was going to be fine. You think money matters to him right now? He has $1 billion in the bank. If he's the richest man on earth and suddenly passes Bill Gates, you think he cares right now? Can it undo death? No, it doesn't matter. So you have to stay in God's will. And if you do something wrong, it's going to affect other people, even if you don't like it. And David realized that. And the rest of the chapter, basically, he goes to the threshing floor, buys it. The man offers it to him for free. He's like, no, it's my sin. I'm going to pay for it. And he brought the oxen. He sacrificed them to God, and God stayed his hand. And basically, everything was made right again at that point, except for the 70,000 people that died. And you're like, that's one story in the Bible. It happened one time. Actually, it happens all over the place. Let's go to 2 Samuel 20, verse 15, a couple chapters earlier. That's not where I want to go. We want to go there later. Hang on a second with me. Bear with me. Okay, chapter 21, sorry. Then there was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, it is for Saul and for his bloody house, because they slew the Gibeonites. Gibeonites were somebody that Israel had a peace treaty with. They were supposed to take care of them. Saul decided to kill them all. Verse 2, and the king called the Gibeonites and said to them, now the Gibeonites were not the children of Israel, but a remnant of the Amorites, and the children of Israel sworn unto them, and Saul sought to slay them in his deal with the children of Israel and Judah. Wherefore David said unto Gibeon, what shall I do for you? And wherewith shall I make thy atonement, that ye may bless the inheritance of the Lord? And the Gibeonites said unto him, we will have no silver nor gold of Saul, nor of his house. Neither for us shalt thou kill any man in Israel. And he said, What ye shall say, and that will I do for you. And they answered the king, the man that consumed us, and that devised against us that we should be destroyed from remaining of the coast of Israel, let 7 men of his sons be delivered unto us, and we will hang them upon the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose. And the king said, I will give them. Saul did something against the Gibeonites. God is punishing Israel with how many years of famine? 3. And now who's going to literally take the fall for it? Saul is dead. His sin is going to cause 7 of his descendants to die here. And the king spared, we'll go down to verse 8. But the king took the 2 sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, whom she bare unto Saul, Armoni, I'm going to probably say these names wrong, but that's okay, and Mephibosheth, and the 5 sons of Michael, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up with Adriel, the son of Barzelli, that's a unique name, Melethelite. And he delivered them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them on the hill before the Lord, and they fell all 7 together, and they put to death in the days of harvest, in the first days in the beginning of barley harvest. Again, who sinned? Saul sinned. Who paid for it? Israel for 3 years. And who paid for it in the end? 7 of his descendants. Which I find also interesting, has nothing to do with it, but Michael, the daughter of Saul, who is she married to at this point? David. I can't imagine that did much for his marriage. By the way, I know he married Michael. He did a deal with Saul. Saul was trying to get him killed. And Saul said, hey, I tell you what, I'll give you my daughter to marry if you kill all these Philistines and bring a part of them to me to show that you killed them. And so David did that. Like, how did that, Pastor? And so he did that. And he got Michal, one of Saul's daughters. When Saul finally went totally crazy and went after David, he left Michal behind. Michal was given to another man as his wife. Saul probably figured David was going to be dead. I mean, he was trying to kill him, and he was the king. How bad can I do at that? When David's done being pursued by Saul, and Saul finally dies, David becomes king. Guess who he takes back? He takes back his wife, Michal. She'd been married to somebody else for a while. She had these children. Do you think she loved these children? Probably. And David's like, oh, we're going to give them the Gibeonites to kill. Can't think that's a good idea. But he gave them to him. Did they do anything wrong that we know of? No. Did Israel do anything wrong? No. Again, not anything. You're like, you're such a depressing guy. I wish you'd be quiet already. Let's do something a little more interesting here. Let's go over to 2 Samuel. Verse 15. Yes. David's got a little insurrection on his hand. It happens. His son had just been defeated, who rose up against him. Not a very nice guy. And there's another guy here, and his name was Sheba, the son of Birchi, a Benjamite. Basically, he's running from Joab, the king of the host. He's got an army on his tail, so he starts running. In verse 15, they came and besieged him, they're talking about Sheba here, in Abel, a Bethlehemite, and they cast up a bank against the city, and it stood in the trench, and all the people that were with Joab battered the wall to throw it down. Siege terminology, guess what? We're going to come in the city, we're going to kill this guy. We're going to knock down the wall, we're filling up the trench, we're going to come over the wall, we're coming into your city whether you like it or not. And we're going to kill everybody in the city. Do they want everybody in the city? No, they just want this one guy. Then cried a wise woman out of the city, hear, hear, say, I pray you, unto Joab, come near hither, that I may speak with thee. And when he was come near unto her, the woman said, art thou Joab? And he answered, I am he. Then she said unto him, hear the words of thy handmaid. And he answered, I do hear. Then she spake, saying, they were wont to speak in old times, saying, they shall surely ask counsel of Abel, and so they ended the matter. What on earth? Okay, verse 19. I am one of them that are peaceable and faithful in Israel. Thou seekest to destroy a city and a mother in Israel. Why wilt thou swallow up the inheritance of thy Lord, of the Lord? I said, why are you going to kill me for? And Job answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so, but a man of Mount Ephraim, Sheba the son of Bichri by name, hath lifted up his hand against the king, even against David. Deliver him only, I will depart from the city. And the woman said unto Job, behold, his head shall be thrown to thee over the wall. Then the woman went unto all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and cast it out to Joab. And he, talking about Job, blew a trumpet, and they retired from the city, every man to his tent. And Job returned to Jerusalem unto the king. Joab's coming up against the city. He's bashing down the wall. He's climbing over the wall. He's going to kill everybody in the city because they got this guy named Sheba. And a woman cries out to him, says, how about we talk this out? Why are you going to kill me? And he says, basically, I just want this one guy. Who is going to pay for Sheba's sin in this case? The whole city, because they were sheltering him. But somebody did something smart. Try to talk it out. Why is this going on? Can we talk about this? And Joab, he wasn't a butcher. He was a military man, but he didn't want to just kill people for the fun of it. You should be scared if somebody likes killing for the fun of it, even if they're a soldier. He's like, no, but far be it from me. I don't want to kill you guys. I just want to kill that guy. He's a traitor. He's like, okay, how about if we throw the head over to you? Good enough for me. They lop off his head. They throw it over the wall. What does Joab do at that point? Got what he came for. They all leave. So who pays for Sheba's sin at this point? Sheba. Everybody else, what happens? They're fine. They can go back about their business. The army leaves. Joab goes back to Jerusalem. All's good in the world again. If bad things are happening, you can also try to work them out. Another verse is in the Bible about praying. It's fascinating how many things went wrong when you don't pray about it. God will give you the right answer. And sometimes even if you pick the right answer, it may not go well because you didn't ask God. You may need God to give you a little push to make things work right. You need to pray about everything. Even simple things. Again, I use myself as an example because first of all, I won't get insulted by myself. Other people get insulted when you use them as examples. And I know everything I've gone through, because I remember. I haven't lost my memory like some older people in this church. Sorry. The job. I'm praying about it. I don't want it if I'm not supposed to have it. My children go to a private school. I pray about it every year. Are they supposed to go there? Every year I pray about it. Just because God says it's right this year, does it mean it's right next year? You understand where I'm going there? It's because this is a good decision right now. Is it a good decision down the road? Things change. Sometimes God wants you in a different area. God wants you doing a different thing. God may want you here at this point. We'll use the Christian school my kids are at. Because everybody that's at that Christian school right now might be a good influence for my children. Attendance changes. Personnel changes. Next year it may not be a good place for them. It may be a detriment to them, and they're supposed to be somewhere else. You don't know where they're supposed to be from year to year. If things are starting to go wrong at your job, pray about it. Maybe you're not supposed to be there anymore. But God gave me that job. Yes, that might be correct. It doesn't mean He wanted you to keep it the whole time. I think God wanted me to leave my last company prior to when I left. Because I was miserable, and I hated it. I really did. And it was a hostile environment. I finally got out of there. You know how God finally got me out of there? Laid me off. He's like, okay, well, you're not going to move easily. I'll just take you and throw you out the door. Now you can move on with your life where you're supposed to be. You know, God's going to get you where you need to be, but He may have to bloody you a little bit if you're not listening to Him. And also, like I said, pay attention to what you're doing. It doesn't just affect you, everything you do. Here's this, I heard something a long time ago. I guess remember how it would go. It's just a silly little story. It's about this guy. He basically is in the wrong place at the wrong time. He wants to do something for his wife. because he forgot their anniversary. He's like, I'm in trouble. So he calls her up and says, I'm going to be late because he's got to go get a gift. Because he's like, you know, something's coming up. And she gets upset about that. And so she makes a phone call, and that affects somebody else's life. And that person goes and does something. And the whole chain of events is, when you get to the end of the story, the National Guard's getting pulled out because they think there's an alien invasion. The whole thing went crazy because all these people were in the wrong place at the wrong time. And next thing you know, the whole thing has gone knocked out of, everything is all out of joint. That's our lives. You're out of the wrong place. It messes up everybody. It can mess up everybody's life. Let's sure what's in here. The military man, if you're in the war, which we are in a war against Satan, it's very important to have everybody in the right place at the right time. If you're Gettysburg, the artillery fires, then the charge took place. We just went over that from the thing we had. Everything has to be at the right place at the right time. But you know why Lee was able to make that charge at Gettysburg, which is so famous that it ripped them apart? Because the Union was so incompetent a couple days earlier. They were in the wrong place at the wrong time. First day at Gettysburg, cavalry decides to stop the rebel advance. They weren't really supposed to do that, but they decided he wanted to fight. He saw the high ground, says, the general doesn't know about it, I'm going to hold it. So he tried to hold it off. One corps of Union infantry got up there before the rebels brought all their strength to bear. He's taken on the whole Confederate army by himself. They were coming up from the side, and they were coming up from the front. What happened to that corps of infantry? If you look at the casualties from Gettysburg, the North lost more men than the South. But Pickett's division was totally destroyed. So was the main division that tried to hold off the Confederate army by themselves. They were butchered. Why? They were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They were out of position. They moved forward without orders, got in front of Gettysburg. Lee came in on two sides and destroyed them. And the rest of the Union army came up and they formed on the hills. And guess how the next 2 days went? The North ended up winning the battle. What should that unit have done? They should have obeyed their orders and not engaged the enemy. They should have stopped where they got to, which would have been the high ground they fought the second and third day on. That's where they were supposed to stop. Their orders were clear. Do not engage. What did they do? They engaged. And they engaged by themselves. They were out of position, and guess what happened to them? They got butchered. Go home and Google the casualties of Gettysburg. You'll be surprised. They're like, I thought the South got crushed. Casualties were pretty even because the division from both sides got crushed.